Thank you, Carol. Thank you, Judy, for asking me to speak. Sam, compulsive eater. I've been in the fellowship literally about 12 years. I came in March of 2014. And so I've been on Footsteps since about 2020. And I pretty much just stay on the daily reprieve. It just works out for my schedule that I can be on the meetings here at 5 p.m. my time, Eastern in the US. I came in to, I guess some form of 12-step program initially in 2007. There was some sort of, I think on Yahoo, they had these listservs where you could join a group for weight problem, food problems. And that was the one I was going to join. And so, but just to give you my state of the mind at the time, I had to go and get a new email address. So it was not connected to anything I used. I had to use a name for the email that had nothing to do with me at all, because I was afraid of they, whoever they are, would find out about my problem or what I thought was a problem. And so I did that. I joined the group, and immediately, two fellows in the group reached out to me and said, "We're so glad you're here. Couldn't have been nicer to me. Couldn't have been nicer." And I immediately stopped going at all, because of that direct connection. So again, that was my state of mind in 2007. So, but that was again, I believe my official first time. But what helps me in my recovery is to just work through the big book. And so I have some little things that I'll quote from during this. And the first thing I want to do is this is from the foreword to the first edition, page 13, Romanette 13. "We are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all." So again, this is Alcoholics Anonymous, a book for alcoholics. I am not one. I have a food issue, and that's it. But this way of living, I have found, has had an advantage for me. Just by coming to the fellowship, being honest, working our tools, I found it has been helpful to me. And so 2014, what was I like then? And this is from the doctor's opinion. To them, their alcoholic life seems the only normal one. And so my normal life at that point was pretty much what it was at 2007. I was compulsively eating, and I would go on these cycles where I would compulsively eat for 6 months, and then 6 months do a crazy diet and try and lose the weight, and then go back on the 6 months of just eating whatever. And that had a very a very difficult work on my brain, because it made me obsessed about what I'm eating and exercise. And for me, that's kind of the real disease. It's kind of the setup for feeling bad about myself, making myself feel less than, and really kind of taking kind of the joy out of life in all sorts of situations. And so that was the normal one that I wanted to get past. And this is from Bill's story, page 5. "Liquor ceased to be a luxury. It became a necessity. And towards the end there, I would become obsessed by, do I have enough food? Particularly, do I have enough soda?" That was my big obsession. Do I have enough soda to last the weekend when the stores close and I have to, there's problems. If I don't have enough, then there's going to be real problems, real panic about it. And there were other foods. You know, it was going to be the weekend, with things going to be open. What would I have to do to get it? And the exercise became the same way. What if I don't get my workout in? What's going to happen? And these were self-created problems that I turned into obsessions, and so on. And then so at that final point, this is from This Is Solution, page 23. "Once this malady has a real hold, they are a baffled lot. There is the obsession that somehow, someday, they will beat the game." At that point, on my own devices, I was not beating the game. So I tried to white knuckle, and just on my own, my addiction to soda. I just said, "I'm not doing it." And since November of 2013, I haven't had a drop of it since then. But as you'll notice, 2013 to March 2014, there's about 4 months there before I came in. And I was absolutely crazy. I literally put myself on a cycle of you go off, you fall off, you do this, you do that. And I was ending that on my own. And towards the end there, I became incredibly angry. So angry that it scared me that I can't control this anymore. Control the anger part of it. I thought I could control the physical part, the eating part, the whatever part, but it was the anger that really drove me in. And so I came into the fellowship, but I was still trying to beat the game. Because when I came in, I did everything I was told. And a little background, I came in overseas. So I was away from America. There are no OA meetings literally in that country I was in. So I'd come in through the phones, and thank God for the phones. But with the time difference, I was coming in at the midnight, meetings. And so these are people who are up in the US at midnight who have our food issues, same issues I have. And they were interesting meetings, and I learned a lot. And one thing they said over and over, get a sponsor. So somehow I found a sponsor and I started working with him. And he was in the UK, I was in Asia. And so I learned a lot from him, but I was still trying to beat the game because what I wanted the recovery, whatever that thing they were talking about on the phones. But did I actually want this higher power business? And I was trying to not do that part for whatever reason. And so this is from page 28. And this is the one book that's quoted, I guess, in the big book. It's The Varieties of Religious Experience, which I've read. And it says, we have no desire to convince anyone that there is only one way by which faith can be acquired. Now, my faith acquiring experience takes years and years and years and years. But in that moment, at that 2014 stage, I was willing to kind of let that part go. Can I work the steps without a higher power or even a concept of it? And I was trying to do that. Then I worked with my sponsor and I learned quite a bit from him. The first thing I'll share is that he said, okay, you're pretty hard on yourself. And that's one thing I've learned about a lot of us is we're very hard on ourselves. And that may be, for me at least, part of the disease, that being hard on myself. And he said, rather than get, down or problematic about what you're eating or the desire to eat something, what if you thought of it as just a signal? It's just a signal that something is wrong. That something's up in your life and you don't know what it is, but you have the desire to eat X or Y and it's an obsession with you. What if you track that back and find out, like, okay, what's going on there? And he shared a second thing that I've always remembered. He said, and he just shared his relapse. And he said, when I tracked it back, that relapse after 10 years of or 10 years of abstinence, he could track it back a year for something he didn't do that he knew he should from that previous year. And then it showed up 1 year later. And I'll talk a little bit more about that. So that first sponsor and all my sponsors have been great. I've learned a lot just from these fellows and their experiences. So, and then this brings me to my second, all right, this quote from page 35, all went for a time, but he failed to enlarge his spiritual life. As you can imagine, if I don't have a higher power, I can do great. Just working the steps, talk to my sponsor, showing up to meetings, talking to fellows. But for me, if I don't have that enlarged spiritual life, which means making this connection, which is the entire point of the book, then I'm going to have a problem. And so that first year, I did really well, got some physical recovery, and my life started to get better progressively. And then, boom, back into it. And I should say that I've had several what we commonly call relapses, but the trend has always been up because I've never left. I've never left the rooms. And so the trend, even though it's dun, 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 it's always up. And so if I never leave, that's my plan, it will always go up. But there's going to be some dips. And that's okay. Because what I've also found out is that in a spiritual life, it cannot be spiritual awakening 24/7. It just isn't. There is a spiritual dryness that they call it, at least in my faith. And that you just keep working and working and working, and then you'll come back up. You never leave. That's what I've learned. And so my spiritual life was two components. One, I held back on the finding a higher power. Two, I was not completely honest in my fifth step. I held something back out of fear. Ego, whatever you want to call it, just fear. Okay? And that was part of it. It created a little bit of a barrier with my first sponsor, who was great. I should have kept him, but I was thinking, maybe I need to move on. And eventually I did. And it was also because I didn't want to tell him about this horrible, horrible thing. So I got a new sponsor, did my step five with her and, let out the monster. And she's like, well, I wish young people, literally, I wish people would let those things kind of go. They happen in life and that's just the way it is. Very understanding about it. And that's exactly what I needed to hear. And maybe I couldn't say that in front of him, but I could with her. I don't know why. Kind of doesn't matter at this point, but I'm glad I did those things. The other part of, and so it was taking that leap of faith that someone on the other end will be understanding about my whatevers, that allowed me to go a little bit farther. And this brings me to page 64. When the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And so just going back to what I initially said with my first sponsor, it's a signal. This desire for me to drink my soda is a signal that something's up. And this particular order of things, meaning spiritual first for me, I know we have a three-legged stool, but for me, if I'm not homing in on that spiritual part of it, and spiritual just basically means is that for me means something is up with me, something core to me, not my emotions, I'm sad, I'm angry, whatever, but something within me, usually that I'm not good enough or I'm not this enough or whatever, is affecting me emotionally and it is showing up in my food or behaviors. There's other behaviors in six and seven, we'll get to six and seven, that are part of this, a part of what I would say is I would just characterize at this point in my recovery, because this is the way I just think about it, but it could be something else, are self-destructive. That's all. So again, because I went overseas, that's when I came in, there were AA meetings there, open AA. There's one open AA meeting. And so I would go there. And sometimes it would just be me and this one other guy just talking, and he's not one of us, and he's in the beverage program. And so it would just be him and I talking, and he had a lot of recovery, a lot of sobriety, had a lot of time in the steps. And so I was able to talk with him about these things. And so when I came back, whenever I would visit the US, I would go to open AA meetings because where I was going, there was very few of our meetings. And so I go to these open AA meetings. And I remember it clear as day. We had to go around the room and introduce ourselves. And this, I said, there's no way, just visiting. And the next guy, or a few guys down, said, he just quoted this. He said, when the spiritual malady is overcome, we straighten out mentally and physically. And then he got up and literally walked out the door. Be like, just, I'm leaving on that one. And I've always remembered that as something that is important for my recovery. Because I want to control things. I want to beat the game. I want this to be about the food I put in my mouth and the exercise I do. That's all I want this to be about. And because I can control that. And I can obsess about it. I can make myself feel bad about it if I don't do it right. Because that's the thing that, as another fellow has said, that's what we get off on, making ourselves feel bad about ourselves. Or I feel bad about myself. Sorry, it's not all of us. So that's what I have to kind of avoid. And so if I go back to the spiritual part, where do I feel broken? Where do I feel that I'm not good enough? Because that's where I'm. This is all coming from, then I start to make better choices. And that's kind of what we're doing. And then there's the other part from page 68. We ask him to remove our fear and direct our attention to what he would have us be at once we commence to outgrow fear. And the he in that would be your higher power or what have you. And the fear for me is a big thing because, that, again, that is a spiritual part. It is a spiritual part that puts that fear into me. Am I not good enough? What are people going to think of me? Am I going to be okay? Am I going to be okay? That's a big thing for me. Now, objectively, someone looking from the outside is, why won't you be okay? You were okay yesterday, last week, the last month, or whatever. But I don't have that sort of objective feeling
Reminder.
here. Okay, thank you. Going quicker than I thought. You have to jump through some of this. And so outgrowing that fear is a spiritual act. And so another part of it I wanted to share was that in meditation, we ask God, this is page 69, in meditation, we ask God what we should do, what we should do about each specific matter. The right answer will come if we want it. Again, I want it to be this way, not necessarily higher power's way. It is a leap of faith to do the higher power difficult, usually, thing. Am I enlarging my spiritual life to get to that point? Not always. I don't always make the right choice or the best choice for me. And then one thing, this is the step 10. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them in higher power. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our hearts to someone we can help. This is from page 84. That is step 10. Again, what they're asking me to do is look for those emotional signals that something is up, something's going on. And what I have found is when I actually look for those signals and I confront them, those feelings, then I'm in a place where I can make a good or the next right thing. Can I do that? I don't always do that. So again, my process, just look for the signals. And then into action, page 88. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did once we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. I found that to be true. And it's problematic because I'm used to the self-created drama of, am I on? Am I off? What's going on? My food here. I will then go around the room and say, and look to other people to tell me through their facial expressions, am I okay? I want them to tell me if I'm okay. They don't know they're doing that. They're living their lives in their head just as much as I am, probably or more. Who knows? They don't have the power to do that. And as I told you, I lived overseas. I have done that with people who have no cultural thing in common with me. They speak English, but they have no cultural read on me. Some American from, and I'm talking to people from Mongolia here, but I'm trying that with them. And it even breaks through to them. There's a whole experience I don't have time to talk about, but they're trying to reassure me that I'm okay. So it's powerful stuff, just saying. And the last thing I'll share is page 90. This is from Working with Others. If he does not want to stop drinking, don't waste time trying to persuade him. And I think that's very true. In our fellowship, it's voluntary. And I'm speaking for myself here and all the sponsors I've had that, and as a sponsor myself, that if that person isn't up for it, if they can't hear it, they can listen to the words and it's not something to be rude about. It's just that they're not going to get it. I'm not going to get it. And whatever good stuff you're going to maybe share with them, that what I've shared with them or what I could share with them that I think is good, it may have no effect on them. And that's okay because I'm not responsible for them any more than they're responsible for me. I can try and help, but if they don't want it, that's great too.
Gentle reminder for one moment, minute.
Oh, thank you, Arya. So, actually, I kind of ran through everything. So I was kind of worried about the time. But that's all I have. I'll go ahead and hand it back over. So we have one more minute to share. Thank you.